The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters. It's 10 a.m. right here in London. I'm Frank Holland. Here are your 5 at 5. Wall Street looks to close out a roller coaster week with the NASDAQ. It's back at all-time highs. Futures, however, they're fighting for more gains at the open. A big part of that rebound tied to Apple and its best day in more than a year. It's higher again this morning. But today it's all about the kickoff to first quarter earnings and the big banks. We tee up the numbers you need to know and the one name that is reeling from new regulatory pressure. Plus, the great inflation debate and if the Fed's 2% mandate, if it makes sense in a post-pandemic world. And later, a new batch of data from China, it misses estimates in a very big way. It is Friday, April the 12th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Happy Friday. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange, coming to you live from CNBC London. Thank you so much for being here with us. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We kick off the hour with a check of U.S. stock futures after what was really a whipsaw session for stocks yesterday that saw the NASDAQ and the S&P close in the green after spending a whole lot of the day deep in the red. Take a look at futures. Bit of a mixed picture right now. Looks like the Dow would open 60 points higher, the NASDAQ in the red. But remember, it closed at a record high yesterday. So big part of this week's rebound can easily be tied to tech and Apple. Shares are coming off a more than 4% gain and their best day since May of 2023. And it's not just Apple. We're also watching Amazon, the stock trading at an all-time high for the first time since 2021. A sharp move higher in Treasury yields doing very little to dent enthusiasm for stocks. And the same goes for the U.S. dollar. Take a look. The dollar index at its highest level since November, sharp move to the upside this week, trading in parity with the euro. We're also watching oil after a new report from the IEA this morning showing that first quarter demand is expected to fall 7% from the previous forecast from the agency. Still, we're seeing oil prices actually move higher. Might be counterintuitive, but they also flagged oil supply security as one issue that investors need to watch. All right, that's the setup. Let's now see how Europe is shaping up as this trading day gets underway. Sylvia Amaro is right here with me in our London newsroom with much, much more on the early action. Sylvia.
Well, happy Friday, Frank. And it also seems to be a happy day for equity markets here in Europe. Look at it. They're all in the green. All the major bourses in Europe are trading positively. I'll highlight, actually, the FTSE 100 crossing above the 8,000 mark, currently up by about 1.2%. We got data out of the United Kingdom showing that the economy expanded by 0.1% in February. You might think, well, that doesn't sound like much. But ultimately, the data suggests that we might be on track to see an end to the technical recession that the UK posted at the end of 2023. Now, today is also a moment for investors to digest what they heard from the ECB yesterday. Essentially, the central bank kept the door open to cutting rates in June. But I want to take you to the sector breakdown as well. At the top, we are seeing basic resources up by 2.7%. There is quite a lot of dynamics when it comes to the gold price and mining stocks pushing this sector higher. Utilities also up by about 2%. Oil and gas, also similar moves there. We also know that oil prices have been moving higher. Currently, Brent trading at above that $90 barrel mark. So that is also contributing to some of the upside in the sector. And also, let's not forget that, Frank, we also are seeing quite a lot of positive momentum in tech stocks today off of the back of the rally that we saw stateside yesterday.
Thank you very much. And one programming note for our European viewers, you and I will be co-anchoring Street Signs starting Monday. Excited to do it with you. And thank you for that report.
Me too.
All right. Turn our attention now to China. Got some new data showing exports. They unexpectedly fell last month in what is just the latest blow to the world's second largest economy. Our Eunice Yun joins me now from Beijing with much more on the data. Eunice.
Thanks so much, Frank. Well, as you said, the March export numbers looked very bad. People were expecting a fall, just not by this much. The March exports were dropped by 7.5% from a year ago versus an estimate of 2.3% fall. This compares to the January to February period, which saw a rise of 7.1%. The imports for March also dropped by 1.9%. Again, a surprise. People were expecting to see a rise of 1.4%. Now, the reason for this is threefold. People were talking about how this is coming off of a high base from last year. Also, the Chinese goods have been seeing weaker demand in markets such as Europe. And in addition to that, the lower prices for Chinese goods really hurt the value. Frank?
So, Eunice, obviously these export numbers, a bit surprising, falling deeper than expected. I want to ask you, what are you hearing when it comes to stimulus measures there in China? Is this something that will be a catalyst for possibly deeper stimulus measures?
Well, yeah, that's what a lot of people are hoping to see. They're hoping to see greater stimulus on the part of the government for consumption. I think what's also interesting about these numbers is that they really undermine what appears to be the government's another big push by the government to rely more heavily on trade and manufacturing rather than making major changes in terms of consumption or having to deal with the property sector. And in fact, you know, as we have been talking about, the whole overcapacity issue has become very, very sensitive here. Just in the past couple of days, state media has been running a whole narrative talking about how Washington is overhyping the issue and that overcapacity isn't really what this whole push to sell things overseas is all about.
All right, Eunice Yun live in Beijing. Eunice, thank you very much. Let's talk more about what we've seen in the global markets over the past few days. Joining me now, right here in the studio, Janet Moy, head of market analysis at RBC Brewin Dolphin. Janet, it's great to see you here in person.
Great to see you, Frank.
Give me a sense. Are you at all surprised about what we saw yesterday? The NASDAQ hitting a record close, despite the fact that now it looks like the rate cuts will be pushed way further back. UBS out with a note saying there's a over 80% chance we won't see the first rate cut until September.
I don't think it's at all too surprising. I think we have seen that play out in the first quarter. I mean, yields keep going up, but then actually markets actually kept rallying. So I think markets are more focused on the fact that the U.S. economy is resilient. I mean, what do you prefer, a U.S. recession or low, high for longer interest rate? I think I would prefer no recession. So I think that is actually what the data is telling us now. The U.S. economy can withstand high interest rates. So I think that's why in the face of high yields, equity markets are still okay.
Okay, so you think the markets are okay. I want to show a chart right here. This is the week to date for the Magnificent Seven, the S&P and the S&P Equal Weight. There's been a lot of talk about the broadening of the market and the S&P Equal Weight's the place to be, but this week it certainly was not. The Magnificent Seven far outperforming those other two indices. What does that tell us? Does that give us any insight about the direction of investing going forward?
Well, I think that there is evidence of a broadening in the equity market rally in the first quarter. You see that primarily in the cyclical sectors. I think that's primarily based on the economic resilience story. I think that could continue. But I do think that the Magnificent Seven will still be relevant, and I think they will still deliver a big chunk of that earnings. And I think that's primarily because of the AI theme and also that ongoing technology. Innovation, etc.
So talk to me about this AI theme. I mean, AI is supposed to increase productivity, but yet we continue to see earnings expectations decline from the start of the year. So if AI is going to be such a powerful force in the market that's fueling these Magnificent Seven stocks, why are earnings expectations falling, and what does that mean?
Well, I think that earnings expectation has been very, very robust, and I think a little bit of slowdown in that is not too problematic in our view. And I think actually if the earnings expectation actually came down a little bit, it means that if the actual data comes out better, then that is more scope for the rally to carry on. And I think this is also not just a quarter-on-quarter theme. It is actually a multi-year theme that we're talking about. We're talking about a lot of hardware and software upgrade, infrastructure upgrades, etc. So there's huge opportunities there.
Let's talk about another multi-year theme, oil. It was just kind of range-bound for quite a bit. Now we're seeing it moving to the upside, even after a report saying that demand's going to fall by 7%. It looks like some of that upside moves due to concerns about supply security. How are you viewing oil? How do you see that impact in the markets going forward? It certainly is inflationary.
It is. I think oil prices are quite hard to predict. I think right now we have a supply deficit. I think that's what the IEA is forecasting for the rest of the 2024. I think, of course, the geopolitical tension would be ongoing in the background. So that's why we have a long energy trade, actually, which is a basket of long energy majors globally. And the thesis is actually primarily based on the fact that these energy companies are improving their capital discipline and shareholders' return, but it is also acting as a hedge as inflation and also right. geopolitical tension.
All right, Janet Moy, it's always great to see you. Thanks. Thank you very much. For more on what's driving the markets and the trading day ahead, head over to CNBC Pro at cnbc.com/pro for exclusive insights and analysis. All right, time now for a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Our Bertha Coombs is here with those. Bertha, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Frank. Shares of Morgan Stanley set to extend yesterday's more than 5% loss. This Sun reports the bank is being investigated by multiple U.S. regulators, including the SEC, Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and the Treasury. According to reports, regulators are looking into whether the bank has adequately investigated the identities of prospective clients and their sources of wealth. Globe Life is responding to a new short seller report from Fuzzy Panda Research that alleges multiple instances of fraud at the life insurance giant. In a statement, Globe Life says the research mischaracterizes facts and uses unsubstantiated claims, in quotes. Shares are higher in the pre-market after falling sharply in yesterday's trade. And finally, Cathie Wood's ARK Investment Management unveiling that it holds a stake in AI darling OpenAI. In an email to clients, ARK said as of April 10th, the ARK Venture Fund invests in OpenAI. The $54 million ARK Fund was launched in September 2022 and invests in both public and private companies, including SpaceX and Epic Games, and most recently, that Reddit IPO. Frank?
All right, Bertha, thank you very much. Great to see you as always. A lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, your big money movers in the one EV stock that just can't seem to hold a charge. Plus, getting set for earnings season, we lay out the themes for the weeks ahead and what to watch in the banks today and later. It's the great inflation debate as we ask whether the Fed's 2% mandate, if it makes sense in a post-pandemic world. We have a very busy hour still ahead. When Worldwide Exchange returns, stay with us.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, package-less and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. We have a market flash for you on Intel and AMD. The Wall Street Journal reporting China is directing its largest telecom carriers to phase out foreign processors that are key to their networks by 2027. It's a move that would hit both companies, according to journal sources. Intel and AMD shares right now, you see, moving dramatically lower, down both about 1.5% right now in the pre-market. We'll continue to watch this story throughout the morning. All right, it's time now for your big money movers. We're going to start with Rivian, searching for some direction this morning after sinking to a record low with yesterday's losses. So this move coming as the EV price wars, they just heat up with Ford cutting prices for its F-150 electric pickup trucks. Shares of Rivian, they've already taken a beating this year, down nearly 60%. Right now in the pre-market, down almost 0.5%. Trump media rebounding from yesterday's 5% drop. This marks the latest negative day for the stock, which fell 8% on Wednesday. The company made its public debut at the end of March, but shares have fallen 35% since then. And shares of Lockheed Martin are looking to climb higher. The U.S. awarding the company a missile defense contract worth up to $4 billion. The funding is meant to help Lockheed develop new capabilities for the Missile Defense Agency's core command system. You see, shares of Lockheed Martin, they're just fractionally higher right now. First quarter earnings season, it is officially here. Big banks, Wells Fargo, Citi, J.P. Morgan Chase and BlackRock kicking things off before the opening bell today. Erbile Gumede joins me live here in London with the key themes for financials this season. Erbile, over to you.
Yeah, Frank, so certainly a modest start to the earnings season is what you're anticipating, particularly for the remainder of the year. When one takes a look at the first quarter, 5% is what you're getting. And we're gearing up for that great first quarterly earnings season of 2024. Analysts a little bit more optimistic than they were heading into last year for the full year earnings per share across the S&P 500. We're expecting that number to be 9.8%. That's more than double the 4.1% that we were seeing as we entered 2023, according to LSEG data. Now, earnings as well as revenue growth is expected to be positive in the first quarter as well. But analysts think that we will see the weakest quarter of 2024, as you can tell, progressively getting higher. And it all kicks off then. Some of the biggest banking names on Wall Street, Citi, will be releasing its numbers as well as Wells Fargo, as well as J.P. Morgan, before getting results then from Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, should I say, as well then as Bank of America. That's coming out on Tuesday. All three of the major banks reporting today are expected, however, to see an earnings slide. J.P. Morgan earnings per share are seen falling almost 4% there on that one, while larger declines are expected out of Citi, nearly 34% down that way, while Wells Fargo will also decline nearly 10% as anticipated. Trading weakness, well, that's expected to weigh on lenders, as well as increased loan provisioning with interest rates remaining higher. But there is one source of optimism which could come from net interest income. We are expecting a little bit of a mixed picture from the first quarter from the lenders reporting today, but all eyes will actually be on the guidance with falling expectations for Fed rate cuts, potentially boosting the outlook for the rest of the year, Frank.
All right, Erbile, thank you very much. For much more on the banks, let's bring in Nancy Priol, co-CEO and senior portfolio manager at Essex Investment Management. Nancy, good morning. It is great to have you here. I'm going to get right into it. I'm going to pick up where Erbile left off. Net interest income. What are your expectations not only for this quarter, but also for the guidance?
Right. Well, certainly the net interest income line is going to be one that's watched very closely, not only for JP Morgan, but for all the banks that are starting to report. We think that certainly things look positive going forward, particularly compared to where the estimates are. We know that rates have gone up. We know that the Fed is much less likely to cut in June. We actually are in the camp that thinks that we're only likely to get one cut this year, probably not until much later in the year. And so that spread that they can earn should be better than what's expected. We think this quarter will come in modestly better than expected, but there's an opportunity, given that expectations for the next two quarters are for that number to shrink fairly dramatically, for those estimates to get revised upwards.
You know, that talk about no cut seems to be growing. Neel Kashkari kind of fueled some speculation that there might not be a cut at all this year. What does that mean for these banks? And also, what does higher for longer mean? If you remember, I'm sure you do, last year, the Silicon Valley Bank issue, a lot of that was caused by the rates being higher for longer and also spiking pretty dramatically. And just this week, we've seen rates on the 10-year spike by 20 basis points.
Right. So we think that the higher for longer in and of itself is a scenario that is very manageable, not only for the banks, but really for the economy as a whole. It certainly, as we just talked about, is positive from a net interest income point of view. It allows the banks to manage the spread that they can earn. The spike is
understood.
What
but what about commercial real estate? That's a different matter when it comes to this higher for longer situation.
Well, that is. And so one of the reasons why we like the big banks rather than the regional banks is just that commercial real estate exposure. There's much more protection from the big banks. It's a smaller part of their book of business. And so we are concerned about that. I'm sure everybody's read the article about St. Louis. There are other cities, particularly in the Midwest, that are struggling like that. And so we need to be careful. We are cautiously optimistic that the spikes that we see in interest rates will be more modest. The Fed is certainly paying attention to their pace of their declines in their book of business. They're talking about slowing that rate of letting those debts mature so that we don't get a spike okay. from a short funding gap.
What about several other factors that are a big influence on how these banks perform? One of them, the IPO market. The other, just consumer deposits. Is there some deposit risk with these higher rates? So much talk about the money coming off the sidelines, but it really hasn't. There's still a lot of money sitting in those money markets.
There is. And we do think that can be a risk, particularly for those banks that are much more dependent on those consumer deposits. Again, that is part of our caution on the regional banks. We think it's likely that that money stays in money markets for longer. It's pretty compelling if you can earn close to 5% or more in those money market accounts. I'm sorry. The other question was on the what was the first question?
It was on the IP market, but before we're almost out of time, Nancy, so I do want to ask you, one other quick question before we get into the IPO question.
Yeah.
Very briefly, your thoughts on Morgan Stanley, and do you have a top pick in the banking sector ahead of earnings season?
We don't have strong, I don't have a strong opinion on Morgan Stanley. We actually are very partial to Evercore. As they are gaining a lot of share in the investment banking side. We are seeing an increase certainly in deal activity overall. We're seeing an increase in M&A activity. We're seeing an increase in certainly a lot of refinancings going on. We're cautiously optimistic on the IPO market. We've seen a couple of good IPOs in the first quarter. We think that there's more to come. And certainly what's going on with AI and the new business formation means that we could be setting the stage for a very strong IPO market sometime in the future.
All right, Nancy Priel, always great to see you. Thank you very much. Have a great day. All right, be sure
Thank
to catch
you.
Two key interviews on the banks today. BlackRock Chairman and CEO Larry Fink. He joins Squawk on the Street in a first on CNBC interview on the back of his firm's earnings. That's at 9 a.m. Eastern. And then also the CFO of Wells Fargo joins Money Movers at 11:45 a.m. this morning. Again, both of those interviews coming up later today. All right, ahead here on Worldwide Exchange, your morning call sheet and the fresh call on Novo Nordisk that has investors finding an appetite for that stock. We're going to be back in just a moment.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It is time now for your morning call sheet. We start with BMO initiating Novo Nordisk with an outperform rating and a $163 price target. BMO citing the company's multiple in-development obesity drugs and expanding manufacturing that will help with supply-constrained markets. Shares of Novo up just about 1%. UBS upgrading its rating and price target on DocuSign, moving it to hold and 62 per share. UBS saying the company has largely moved past material post-COVID expansion headwinds and has further margin upside potential. Those shares up over 1%. Raymond James upgrading GitLab to outperform and setting a $70 price target. Raymond James saying it favors software stocks that show durable growth and incremental improvements in profitability, and GitLab checks those boxes. Those shares up almost 1.5%. Got one more for you. Citi cutting its price target on Tesla to $180. Citi citing near-term headwinds tied to product age and saturation and seeing more downside than upside potential ahead, putting some pressure on Tesla this morning. Shares down more than 1%. Let's get a check on more of this morning's headlines. NBC's Francis Rivera is in New York with the very latest. Francis, good morning. Good to see you.
Hi, Frank. Good to see you on this Friday. We begin today with the latest out of the Middle East. American government workers based in Israel have been ordered not to travel outside of major Israeli cities as tensions between Iran and Israel and the U.S. are at perhaps their highest since the Islamic Revolution in 1979. Millions of Israelis are on edge ever since the U.S. warned that Iran may be planning a significant attack in retaliation of the airstrike against an Iranian consulate building in Damascus last week. According to Reuters, Iranian sources said Tehran will respond in a way that aims to avoid major escalation and it will not act hastily. House Speaker Mike Johnson is traveling to Mar-a-Lago today, where he will deliver remarks on election integrity alongside former President Trump. That's according to two sources familiar with the plans. Speaker Johnson gave few details when pressed by NBC News earlier this week, but a source in his office said among the topics of discussion will be legislation to prevent non-citizens from voting. Reactions continue to pour in following the death of O.J. Simpson on Thursday. In a statement to NBC News, Fred Goldman, the father of Ron Goldman, called Simpson's death no great loss to the world. It's a further reminder of Ron's being gone. Simpson was acquitted of murder of Goldman along with his ex-wife Nicole Brown Simpson in 1995. Meanwhile, Caitlyn Jenner offered a two-word response to Simpson's death, posting on X, "Good riddance." Simpson was 76. For Friday, you're up to date with your news headlines. Frank, we send it back to you.
Francis, thank you very much. You have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, coming up, Apple doubling down on its house chips, but do not expect a touchscreen MacBook anytime soon. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up right after this break. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I am Frank Holland coming to you from CNBC London. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We pick up half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures. After what was really a whipsaw action, whipsaw session for stocks yesterday that saw the NASDAQ and the S&P close in the green after they spent a whole lot of the day deep in the red. Take a look at futures. A bit of a mixed picture right now. The Dow off of its highs of earlier looks like it would open up just about 35 points higher right now. You can see the NASDAQ under a bit of pressure. We'll get into that in just a second. Big part of this week's rebound can easily be tied to tech and to Apple. Shares are coming off a more than 4% gain, their best day since May of 2023. And it's not just Apple. We're also looking at another Mag 7 member. That's Amazon. The stock's trading at an all-time high for the first time since 2021. Weakness this morning, however, at least partially is tied to chips when we're talking about the NASDAQ. And Intel and AMD among the biggest laggards right now on the NASDAQ 100, at least in the pre-market. The Wall Street Journal reporting China is asking its largest telecom companies to phase out tech by those two companies before 2030. You can see both are down just around 2% right now. Intel and AMD also dragging down some closely watched chip ETFs, including the iShares Semiconductor ETF ticker SOXX and the VanEck Semi ETF ticker SMH. We're also watching oil this morning after a new report from the IEA showing first quarter demand falling 7% from their previous forecast. However, we have seen oil take a move to the upside. That could possibly be tied to the fact that the report also flagged some issues with oil supply security, citing attacks on Russian refineries as one of the issues that they're looking at right now. WTI, the U.S. benchmark, up over 1%. All right, turn our attention now to the picture around inflation. The March PPI data showing that figure climbed just above 2% from a year ago, below expectations, but seeing its biggest gain in about a year. If you strip out food and energy, that figure seeing an even bigger jump, up nearly 3% from a year ago, and also showing an uptick from February. Speaking on the back of that hotter than expected CPI report, Boston Fed President Susan Collins becoming the latest central bank chief to downplay expectations around the start of rate cuts.
I do expect that it will be appropriate to begin lowering the federal funds rate, but later this year. However, in addition to that optimism, I'm also realistic about the risks and the uncertainties which remain elevated. Recent data suggests that it may take more time than I had previously thought to gain greater confidence in inflation's downward trajectory before beginning to ease policy.
Well, as the Fed's 2% inflation target just continues to remain elusive, it really raises the question whether that mandate is still a realistic goal. And if not, how do we navigate a non-2% inflation world? For much more, let's bring in Daniel Morris, Chief Market Strategist at BNP Paribas Asset Management. He's joining me right here in London. Also, Dana Peterson, Chief Economist at the Conference Board. Good morning to both of you. Dana, I'm actually going to start with you. Is 2% inflation post-pandemic, with all the changes we've seen in this world, is that a realistic target for the Fed?
I think it is. Certainly 2% has been the sweet spot to keep the economy humming along. And also if the Fed changed its mandate in the middle of the game, it would certainly lose a lot of credibility. So the key thing is if the Fed is going to maintain a 2% inflation target, it does mean that interest rates are probably going to be higher going forward than what we saw during the period between the great financial crisis and the pandemic.
All right. So credibility. We've heard a couple Fed speakers mention that we can't change it. We got to stay credible. But for investors, how do you play this Fed that's trying to remain credible but is insisting that we get down to 2%? I know one of the areas you're looking at is mega cap tech. This week, we're going to show a week-to-date chart. Mega cap tech, specifically the Magnificent Seven, far outperforming the S&P and even the S&P equal weight. Does that continue? Do investors continue to go to big tech for safety?
Well, it's interesting how tech's become a defensive asset in a lot of people's minds. Certainly, if you think about the landscape, and even if it is higher for longer, you know, certainly tech and valuations for growth stocks in general, very sensitive to what you have happening with policy rates. But now, wherever we are, we should be within that range. So higher for longer, one cut, two cuts, you know, we're not going to be too far off. So the valuation impacts will be minimal. That means we focus on earnings, and the outlook for earnings growth for growth stocks in general, frankly, we think is still quite positive.
All right, Dana, I want to come back over to you. Let's talk about the federal funds rate. You have actually a forecast that's pretty interesting. Just for the audience, the funds rate effectively dictates the cost of money here in the U.S. So according to your research, from the Great Recession to the pandemic, the average federal funds rate, that was 1.5%. Your forecast is that it's going to get down to 2.5 to 3.5%. Just for context, right now it's at 5.25, 5.5. I'm throwing a lot of numbers at people, but basically you seem to have a very optimistic outlook on where this federal funds rate is going.
Well, we're not going to get there overnight. It's probably going to take a few years to get there. But even still, between 2.5% and 3.5%, that's higher than the 1.5% average during the period before the pandemic. And certainly that means the Fed is going to, it could even be higher. And certainly we see a lot of upward inflation pressures that are structural that the Fed is going to have to lean against. Certainly labor shortages, putting upward pressure on wages, geopolitics affecting food and energy prices, and also insurance companies raising the cost of insurance for cars and homes. We don't know when that's going to end. So the Fed's going to have to really lean against that. And so that suggests that over the longer term, we're going to have to see rates that are higher than what we're used to.
Dana, I got to be honest. You just named all the reasons that we're not going to get back there. So what gets us there? I mean, insurance prices aren't going to go down anymore. The labor market remains very hot in the U.S. Its productivity and growth just seems to churn on. So how do we get to down to this rate? How do we get to the point where the Fed feels comfortable enough to cut?
Sure. Well, the good news is that shelter costs, which are a big chunk of both the CPI and the PCE deflator, the latter of which the Fed uses to conduct monetary policy, is slowing on a year-on-year basis. And we think it's going to continue to slow and help us get to 2%. How do we know that? Well, if you look at past movements in the Case-Shiller Home Price Index and also more recent readings from rents, they're all showing that shelter costs are going to continue to slow over the course of this year. But it's going to take the rest of the year. And that's probably going to get us back to 2%, hopefully more sustainably.
All right, you're putting a lot on shelter. Daniel, let me give you the last word.
Sure.
What now? You already gave us mega cap tech. I had a guest here in Europe on Street Signs before Worldwide Exchange saying right now is the time to put money in tips. Where would you suggest that investors put their money to survive the storm, if you will, until we get down to this 2% inflation or if we're just never going to get there?
Well, actually, on the fixed income side, we share the view being overweight longer duration tips in the U.S. So we do see a prospect for those real yields coming down. They are at high levels historically. And on the equity front, actually, we're optimistic on China. Clearly, that's been a tough call over the last year and a half. We think the worst is past us. We know the recent data hasn't been fantastic. But so we say the bleeding seems to have stopped. We're not going down anymore. We're performing in line, really, with the rest of global equities. And perversely, if you want to call it the China put, when we do get this bad Chinese data, it increases the likelihood the government does more.
You know, yesterday we also had a guest that was very bullish on consumer staples, believing that they can pass along price increases even with inflation. Agree, disagree?
Well, certainly that's been one of the key surprises over the last couple of years. So you kind of wonder, though, are people that willing now after having come out of lockdown to keep paying higher prices? For us, that's probably more of a risk.
All right. Bullish on big tech, man on staples. Daniel Morris, great to have you here. Dana Peterson, thank you for being here as well. You both have a great day. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, the action at Augusta set to resume as golf it finds itself at a critical crossroad. The big money tied to big changes in the game, including an uneasy truce hanging over the Masters. We're going to be right back. Dom Chu with much more on this. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your global briefing. Japan's five-year yield rising to its highest level since 2011 on bets. The Bank of Japan will raise interest rates this year. The BOJ ended the world's last negative interest rate regime last month as attention turns to the weaker yen. That currency, it dropped to a three-decade low earlier this week. UK GDP rising by 0.1% in February after the country slipped into a technical recession last year. But even as growth makes its return, even slightly, and inflation shows signs of abating, traders are still lowering their rate cut expectations for the Bank of England from 6 to 2 cuts this year. And the Chinese market's closing in the red on weak trade data, exports dropping by more than the expected 7.5%, and imports unexpectedly contracting by almost 2%. This follows a lower-than-expected read on inflation yesterday as the country's central bank remains committed to current monetary policy. All right, turn our attention now to the world of sports. Day two of the Masters, it gets underway in just a few hours. Everyone from the golfers, the local economy, and the business world will be trying to make some real green from the play on the greens. Right here with us, the number one golfer at CNBC, Dom Chu, with a look at the big money at the Masters. Dom, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. So day one was marked by bad weather, a lot of rain delaying the start, and then play being suspended due to the darkness just around 7:51 p.m. Eastern time yesterday. Now, Bryson DeChambeau is the current leader at 7 under par after shooting an opening round 65. World number one Scottie Scheffler is at just hot on his heels at 6 under par. And then Tiger Woods, yes, is currently in 17th place through the first 13 holes. He's got to finish up the rest of the day today. That first round will resume this morning at 7:50 a.m. Eastern time, and the second round for those who finished yesterday at 8 a.m. Now, the Masters is not just one of the biggest events on the golf calendar, but it's also one of the biggest sports moneymakers out there as well. Just to give you an idea of the numbers that we're talking about from an economic perspective, you take a look at some of the data around the at least estimates around just some of the impact. The economic impact has been estimated by some analysts at $120 million annually just from what's happening here with the Masters, just because of one event. According to the MasterCard Economics Institute, spending on their card network was up 85% on day one in that area versus just what it was prior to that. That's how much of a spike it causes in spending. Prize money, $18 million purse, and expected $3.2 million goes to the winner. So you got to play well there to make the money. And then merchandise sales, again, estimated at $70 million per week by those who track it. Well, that's something to watch. And, of course, private jets, according to data from FlightAware, about 1,500-plus private jets will be going in and out of that Augusta area this week. As for the current state of golf, it is on the upswing, driven in large part by the pandemic. A lot of folks got out there during the pandemic and up until now because of the social distancing aspect, but it's been carrying through. Data from NBC Sports Next, which houses the TeaTime.com platform, also the Golf Now platform, they track bookings for tee times. They're up 15% year over year through the month of March, even as those pandemic tailwinds start to normalize. And by the way, data from the National Golf Foundation, just to give you an idea, 15% increase in the number of female golfers out there. So there's a lot more participation, Frank, and this is obviously a very important week for all those golf fans and the golf economy out right there.
You know, speaking of the golf economy, big money event, obviously, but there's also kind of a tug and war between LIV and the PGA. Where does that stand right now?
Well, it stands just where it stood about a week or 2 weeks or 3 months ago. There hasn't been a lot of activity now. There was an expectation at the end of last year that we could see the movement towards possibly some kind of a construct of a deal in the early part of this year. That did not happen. Then there was a pushback effect, and a lot of folks thought it would kind of happen as we approach the Masters. We still have not seen yet a deal or any kind of real deal chatter arise there. But one of the telling things is Rory McIlroy, who gave a press conference just before the Masters, and he talked about this idea that the current state of golf in professional sports is unsustainable given the kind of dynamic that we've seen between LIV and the PGA Tour. So there's definitely a lot of activity that's anticipated to happen. Whether or not it happens in the next couple of weeks or months remains to be seen.
You know, Dom, on a side note, I hope I didn't blow your cover when I called you the number one golfer at CNBC. I don't know what you're telling people your handicap is or if you're out there making some bets. I hope I didn't blow your cover.
Frank, one of the things that you've learned in golf is nobody cares what you shot. So.
Dom Chu, great reporting as always. Enjoy the Masters this weekend. All right, ahead, the one word that every investor needs to know today, plus why our next guest says the bulls, they may be down, but not completely out after a turbulent inflation-fueled trading week. And join the first ever CNBC Changemakers event in New York City next Thursday, April 18th. This year's changemakers include Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, actress Drew Barrymore, and many others. They're going to share how they are reshaping business and redefining leadership. To learn more, scan the QR code on your screen or visit cnbcevents.com/changemakers. We are back in just a moment. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It is time now for your WEX wrap-up. The Wall Street Journal reporting China is directing its largest telecom carriers to phase out foreign processors that are key to their networks by 2027. It's a move that would hit Intel and AMD. According to journal sources, shares of both companies down just around 2%. Apple plans to change its entire Mac lineup with AI-focused M4 chips. The company released Macs with M3 chips 5 months ago and has been struggling with slowing computer sales. FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried is appealing his fraud conviction and 25-year prison sentence just 2 weeks after he was ordered to pay $11 billion for his crimes. If SBF loses his appeal, he would have to petition the Supreme Court to take the case. The Wall Street Journal says federal regulators are investigating Morgan Stanley's wealth division over how it vets clients who are at risk of laundering money. Globe Life responding to research firm Fuzzy Panda's allegations of insurance fraud, calling the report wildly misleading. Shares the company reclaiming some of yesterday's losses, where it dropped more than 50% on a new short position by Fuzzy Panda. And Kathy Wood's ARK Venture Fund unveiling a new stake in OpenAI, calling it an explosion in artificial intelligence capability. OpenAI is now 4% of the fund, just behind Anthropic's 5% weighting. All right, here's what to watch today. Bank earnings in focus. Citi, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, BlackRock, and State Street all get set to report. U.S. Steel shareholders will vote on the proposed acquisition by Nippon Steel at 1 p.m. Eastern. Several Fed officials set to speak today, including Kansas City President Jeff Schmid, Atlanta President Raphael Bostic, and San Francisco President Mary Daly. And two high-profile interviews on CNBC today, BlackRock Chairman and CEO Larry Fink. He will join Squawk on the Street at 9 a.m. Eastern Time in a first on CNBC interview on the back of his firm's earnings. Then at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time, an exclusive sit-down with Nike CEO Joe Donahoe. All right, markets a bit mixed following yesterday's mostly positive session, with the Nasdaq coming off a fresh record close, helped in part by Apple, its best day since May. Amazon also hitting an all-time high. Joining me now, Victoria Green, G-Square Private Wealth founding partner and chief investment officer. She is also a CNBC contributor. Vicky, good morning from London. I'm going to jump right into it. Kind of interesting look when you look at the futures right now. How do you see today shaping up? What's your WEX word of the day?
My WEX word of the day, I'm taking a page out of playbook of Aaron Rodgers. I've got five letters for you. R-E-L-A-X, relax. When he started the season 1-2 in 2014, everybody started getting really, really nervous about it. And if you look at this, we are expecting earnings growth. I think the last 2 weeks have been tough, but let me put tough in context for you. We are down less than 2% from our highs. We're down about 1.05% here in April, the first 9 trading days. Not amazing, but after such a strong Q1, we knew Q2 was likely a little bit rockier. We probably weren't going to annualize 40% all year. So I think people need to take a step back. Bull market, very intact.
Okay.
This last week or two, speed bump, not a derailment.
All right, so not a derailment, but you're in the camp where you believe we're only going to get 2 rate cuts this year. How does that impact your view of the markets and the so-called broadening out? This week we saw the Magnificent Seven far outperform everybody else. Do you still believe in the idea that we're going to see a broadening out of the markets, even with the idea of fewer rate cuts? UBS today saying more than 80% chance we don't even get even one cut until September.
Yeah, and right now I think swaps are pricing in 44 basis points for so slightly below 2 cuts right now. And when I look at it, I think broadening is great. It's the strength of the rally. The bull market needed more participants, and we are certainly getting more participants. Value and quality are coming, you know, and I think some of it is there was fatigue in the momentum play in the Magnificent Seven. And I think you've whittled down the Mag Seven to a little bit more, you know, a little more choosy, maybe your top four that you really like in that space. But I think you keep your core tech. I love industrials. I like energy right now. I like some of the commodity play. And I think the one area I'm skeptical of right now is small caps. I think they're going to bear the brunt of higher for longer and just really facing more headwinds. So I love the quality cash flow peers up in the large cap space.
Let's get to your pick. Your pick is in the insurance space, Progressive. A lot of talk about insurance this week after CPI. I just want to ask you, you're not concerned about severe weather. So the hurricane forecast came out earlier this week. Since then, Progressive shares taken a very sharp decline. The forecast is extremely active. 23 storms. Not worried about that severe weather risk and how it impacts Progressive?
No, I mean, it is a risk. There's always a risk with insurance companies if they have a bad season. They had a bad March last year. That's why the comps are so good, because they're pretty weak comps over last year. The loss ratio, we think, is only going to be 70%. I think they're well-positioned. I think they do a good job pricing policies, making sure they're balancing risk in different regions so they're not too overexposed for hurricane. But there is risk on weather, right? You've got earthquakes in New York, fire in California, hurricanes on the golf course, always a little bit of a risk. So, but I think Progressive is well run, yeah. And a 300% EPS growth, gotta love it.
Okay, gotta leave it there. Vicky Green, great to see you. All of you have a great weekend. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.